Hello, and welcome to Nintendo World Report Connectivity, episode 370. I'm your host after a little bit of a hiatus here. Came back from the mountains a little bit wiser, a little bit, I don't know. I played golf and saw a minor league baseball game. I'm Neil Ronahan, and welcome to Connectivity. Joining me today, as always, even when I'm not here, John Raritan.
You play golf like it's like a golf RPG. Like, you can't just go to a regular golfing event. Yeah. You have to like go up into the mountains and like defeat it five wise Sherpas in golf.
So, I mean, like, I guess, you know, anybody where my northeastern PA people at, I was in the Poconos, which is probably only makes sense to people within like Pennsylvania, New York, and New Jersey. But the golf courses that I have gone to there have slowly closed over the years. There's one golf course where I got a hole in one at. That is now like in a wildflower refuge. So now my dad goes out there more often than I do, but he found a golf course. But the wild thing about it is that one, it is like interwoven into a housing development. And you have to take a golf cart for it because some of the, like, between some of the holes, it was like a 5 to 10 minute golf cart ride. We were talking to the people who ran the course, and it is apparently like, if you were to walk it, they don't allow people to walk it. It is 13 miles to walk. It's like, yeah, like someone asked, like, oh, can I do it? It's like, dude, it's a half marathon. Like, I was joking with my dad. I was like, you have to sign a waiver to walk this course. But it was, I mean, it was like in the mountains, like there were really picturesque views. Fun course. Lots of like just weird, like you had to go like it felt like video game designed holes in some spots, because there was one where like the green was just like on top of a hill. So like generally, like unless you got the perfect shot, like you would be at the bottom of the hill and have to hit it up. But I got a birdie on a par three. So I'm gonna ride that high. So we are going to talk, we are sitting on the precipice of what I've heard is called Summer of Gaming, I think. Summer yet, late spring of gaming.
I've just been calling it the Keely Wank Fest.
Yeah, Key 3. But in the space where E3 usually happens, anchored by Summer Games Fest, the Jeff Keely Show, will have... Joel DeWitt and Alex Arona will be live in LA. I forget if they're actually going to be at the press conference stream thing or not.
I thought you were going to say you forget if they're actually going to be in LA, and I'm like, that's where we sent them.
But they are. They're going to be at like there's the actual like show part of it. So by the time you hear this, they will be there covering games. It feels weird that like there is an event in June that people are actually going to, more people, because I think they had it a little bit smaller last year. Now they opened up, they included us. Also last year, I don't really think there were any Switch games. I think Sonic Frontiers technically, but it wasn't on Switch hardware. So we'll have more news on that. But as we're recording this, only the Guerrilla Collective stream happened, which John and I did not know happened today until mere minutes before recording. Which I think just speaks to some of this, like, I hate being the curmudgeon, but you look at some of the stuff when I think Summer Games Fest, like the opening kickoff show or whatever is like 2 hours long. The Xbox showcase is going to be 2 hours long. This Guerrilla Collective stream was apparently 3 hours long today. There's something to be said for when, and even I'll give the PlayStation showcase. Like I think the content in that from late May, it might have been disappointing, but like it was like 40 minutes long.
It was well formatted and well presented. Just wasn't interesting.
I mean, even if the content's lacking in a Nintendo Direct, like Nintendo's pretty good at like, we're gonna hit you with news, we're gonna be like it's that efficiency about it. And generally, and I know this from some of like just knowing, like, you know, chasing the rumor scene as far as like how indie worlds and directs are put together, is that usually Nintendo doesn't include games unless they have something to announce. And that's what I've noticed with a lot of the, especially like the smaller, your wholesome directs and stuff like that, is a lot of times it'll just be like, here is a new trailer. And it's good for awareness of games, but I think when like 75% of the games don't really have any news tied to it besides like here's footage of a game that you've maybe never heard of unless you watch this or were aware of the scene. Like, I feel like you got to do it where it's like, okay, if you got release dates or a demo or something like that, like that's how you, what you have to do to be included in these things.
Right. When it's only good for awareness until your 1 2-minute long slice of life game trailer amongst a 3-hour long presentation. Yeah. Like nobody knows anything that was in this. I did a quick search on Twitter before we started this just to be like, okay, anything big happened? I went and found the list and all that. And like nobody's talking about it.
Yeah. And it's not like the games are there. Like, I know World of Horror got a release date. That's a game that I feel like has been in development forever. I think I saw it in multiple PAXs, and I haven't been to a PAX in 3 years. Anton Ball, which is one of the many 2D Wario likes that are popping up. I think Pizza Possum was there, which looks quirky and fun. Dawn of Monsters, the 13 AM Kaiju beat 'em up game is getting some DLC. Demon School, I think that got a demo. That might have been one of the games that just had a new trailer. Demon School looks fun as hell. Like, there's a lot of good games here, and you know, reasons to be excited, but it's too much. Like, I'm gonna pay attention to Summer Games Fest. I think I'll have it. I think it's on while I'm quote unquote working. I think I might have a meeting during it. But I'll have it on in the background. So anybody that I'm working with, if you're in a meeting with me on Thursday afternoon, and you see my eyes dart right and left, it's because I'm watching a video game stream.
I mean, this won't go up until after that. So I think you're safe.
So friends at work who have found this podcast, be cool.
Yeah.
I hope there's some cool stuff. It's June 7th as we're recording this. Do you think that Nintendo will have a Nintendo Direct this month?
I want to say yes, but like honestly, no, I don't.
I mean it's people talking about it whenever Nintendo has news, and people are like, oh my god, they just dropped a Pikmin trailer out of nowhere. This is so surprising. It's like they've been consistently doing this.
This is the plan. Years.
Yeah, like it's part of
it's the a month before plan. Launch.
Yep. Yeah. I honestly, the only two things that I think will happen Nintendo Direct wise is, I feel like it'll be interesting because it will see how Nintendo views Pikmin 4. Like Xenoblade 3, Fire Emblem Engage, Zelda, they all got like game focused Nintendo Directs about a month before launch.
Yeah. They could do a Pikmin. Well, if they were going to do a Pikmin Direct, would they have done the character customization thing?
I think so. Okay. I mean, that's kind of like, if you look at, for example, with Zelda and Fire Emblem, it's not like they saved all the news up until that point. There were still some reveals before then.
Yeah.
I think if they view Pikmin 4 as a major tentpole game, which they might not, but then again, like I think it's on par as far as like what you would think sales expectations with something like a Fire Emblem or a Xenoblade.
It's probably on par with Metroid Prime 4.
Yeah.
Sales wise.
Yeah. I think Pikmin 3 Deluxe did okay.
That sells like a couple million, which is what Metroid Prime 4 will be lucky to sell.
Yeah. Yeah. And I mean, like Xenoblade 3, I think, didn't hit 2 million. Fire Emblem Engage, I mean, did not hit three houses numbers. I know that much.
Yeah.
Pikmin 4 has a release in the back half of July. Is it like the 21st or something like that?
Yeah.
So maybe we'll get a Pikmin 4 specific direct in like 2 weeks. Because they've been pretty consistent about doing those game specific directs like almost a month to the day before launch.
Yeah. And I could definitely see that being the direct for this month and people losing their shit.
Yeah.
When that's the direct.
Which, I mean, they could also just do like they do those overview videos. That could just be something that comes out and it's not the direct branding. But like, I mean, we'll get more Pikmin 4 news. They will eventually have to actually show details and footage of everybody 1-2 switch.
Do they?
I just love how they announced that, and there's like literally nothing.
So like, the funny thing is like the fact that they announced that actually made me more confident that they would have a Nintendo Direct, or that at least if they do, like, it'll be okay. Because the fact that they were able to just dump that out there and not feel like they needed to save everything for a Nintendo Direct makes me feel good about their lineup for the rest of the year. That they could just be like, nope, you just go out there to die. We don't need you. We don't want you. Like, we don't even want you to fill space. Like, just,
yeah,
we're going to put you out there in the shadow of Tears of the Kingdom where no one will notice.
Yep.
And hopefully somebody buys you on accident.
Yeah. And they announced that on like a Thursday night. I was going to say, did they even like Friday news dump that? Like, PM. I guess they Friday news dumped it in Japan.
Yeah. Did 1-2 Switch do significantly better in Japan? Was that their target audience?
Well, no. I mean, Friday news dumping is like when you release bet. Like, here's a good example of a Friday news dump. If you're like a company that put out a game that was critically acclaimed, that had a rushed development process, and you're like, hey, it's coming to Switch, we're going to include the restored content DLC is free DLC a little bit after launch. We swear we're doing it. We're announcing it. Uh-huh. Nintendo's behind us 110%. That's when you Friday news dump that you're a piece of shit like Aspyr Media, and you release a Knights of the Old Republic 2 on Switch and say you're going to have the Sith Lords restored content free pack, and then apparently not even have the fucking rights to the content. And then a year later, almost a year to the day after the game comes out, you're just like, sorry, brah, here's your proof of, like, you have to go through a convoluted process to get a free game that you might already have bought.
I was going to say, you know, the best part is when you literally own every single game on the free game list.
Yes, I think, yep, I have almost all of them. But I think because I did the review for it, I didn't even bother looking into it. But because I don't actually have a proof of purchase because it was a review code.
Send them your recently lowered review score as your proof of please.
I'll put a gun to your head. Like, if you want to make it an 8 again.
Yeah.
Although it doesn't even, I tried to get it changed on Metacritic, and Metacritic doesn't change it. But, you know, fair. Policy is a policy, but
we should reach out to OpenCritic. OpenCritic, this is your chance to prove once and for all that you're better than Metacritic. I already like you more, but like, this would be the icing on the cake.
I have not been this mad about like a video game publisher doing a skeezy thing, and like, well I guess like a skeezy thing that's not like rampant sexual harassment, because like, you know, Ubisoft and Activision,
I suppose we should be happy nobody died this time around. Yeah.
As far as we know. But like, as far as like just an announcement and a take backsies about it, like, I'm furious because I also wrote that review that I put a little like an update to it, but I did keep the original text, if only that I can read it whenever I give a company the benefit of the doubt and be like, don't do that again. Because my review is like, this is a pretty good version. It could be the definitive version when this comes out in a few months.
Right. It was sold based on that content. Like, that was a huge,
here's the funny thing.
Like, it's extra DLC. Like, that was the selling point of the game.
I even tried to like chase up PR a couple months ago, because I'm like, okay, like, they went radio silent on this. And the PR that they worked with when this game came out, it's just like, oh, we're not working with them anymore. I'm like, what the hell?
Yeah.
I'm mad about that. But anyway. Everybody 1-2 Switch. Is that what they're calling it?
Everybody 1-2 Switch. Yes, there's a picture of a horse on the cover.
Yep.
Holding a Joy-Con as if it's a gun pointing at my face.
Yes. And you can use your phone in some games. There was that report on Fanbyte from last year. It's a lot of stuff that when that posted, I just nodded, because it's a lot of what I heard as well. I have heard this game is absolutely terrible, which makes me very excited to play it.
Yep. Yeah, they were saying that it just tested terribly internally, and they were debating whether or not to even release it.
Yeah. I'm happy it's getting released, just because, like, I feel like even when things are crappy, like, I would like to see the end product.
Yeah, I love bad games, but, like, I'm not What Everybody 1-2 Switch is one of the only Switch games I've ever traded in.
Or you mean 1-2 Switch, the original one?
Yes, the first one. Yeah.
So
I'm good. Thank you.
I don't think the original one is it's not great. I do think it's fun. Like
I had enjoyment
playing that game. I think that, like, everybody said, oh, they should pack it in. Like, no, Nintendo 100% made the right decision of not packing it in. I think if they pack that game in with the Switch does less well.
I wouldn't pack it in the sense of putting a copy of the game in there. I would have it be a free download off the eShop to explain how your Joy-Con works. Like, I don't even consider it a game. Yeah. I consider it roughly as interesting as watching the Koi Pond tech demo for the Wii U that was at E3. Like, that's all it is. There's no game to this. It's a tech demo that says, boy, this rumble sure is nice. And you go, yeah, it is. I spent too much money learning that the rumble was nice.
Yep. Yeah.
Yeah. No, 1-2 Switch is one of the worst things I've played in a long time. And I play some shit. So
I've definitely played worse. But as far as a game that is technically sound,
I suppose.
As far as a game that's technically sound, it's a bad game that is technically sound. I just have played a lot of Switch games that are not technically sound, and I would probably term as worse than 1-2 Switch.
Yeah, I mean, it's easy to be technically sound when all you are is a series of FMVs that cue controller vibration. Like, there's no graphics. It's just a bunch of recordings of, like, some out-of-work actors.
Yeah.
It feels like something that I would pay 99 cents for on Steam and feel like, yeah, I should probably return. That is what 1-2 Switch feels like.
Yeah, it's probably a non-union job too, knowing Nintendo.
Oh yeah, these are just like random people they got. Also, I need to remind you, it was $50. It still is $50 on the eShop, which I believe is more than everybody 1-2 Switch is releasing for. I think that one's 40 or 30.
I think it's 30 in America, or in the US. Because Donald had sent the Canadian listing, so I thought it was 40, and then I saw people talking about it being 30, and then I realized it's because Canada's different.
Yeah, everybody 1-2 Switch is $29.99.
Yeah. But yeah, that comes out on June 30th. And I guess when it comes to a Nintendo Direct, I could see a partner Direct, but I think Nintendo will probably do that at the same time that they did last year, which would be the end of the month, a little bit farther away from all this Keighley stuff.
They're at an awkward point right now at the end of the Switch generation where, like, they don't have a whole lot of partners.
Yeah. Just, like, be a half an hour on Hogwarts Legacy.
It's just Hogwarts Legacy and Biomutant, which I would watch with bated breath.
What other transphobic games could you go with Hogwarts Legacy? They're working with Doug Apple, like.
Yeah.
But anyway, the Pikmin 4 news drop that we got was that your character is a custom character, because Olimar goes and crash lands on a planet, and then the rescue team, which appears to be made up of, was it Alf, Brittany, and Charlie from Pikmin 3, and I think other people, and your space dog, they all crash land. I do like that. I mean, it's evident that the game is going to play out where you are going to, you know, rescue the different party members over time. The fact that there's a lot, like, how are we gonna, we already did have the three party members for Pikmin 3 that you would find over time. Like, are we gonna have a bigger roster to pull from? Like, how is this all gonna work? I'm very excited to play this game, because, like, Pikmin 3 is honestly, it's an all-timer. Like,
oh, Pikmin 3 is easily the best game in that series.
Yeah. I put together my top 25 on the Matt Zawodniak and Friends 5x5 grid. Pikmin 3 is on it. Like, that game rocks.
Yeah. Yeah, it's I'm not a huge fan of the first two Pikmin games, but Pikmin 3 manages to just take all of the criticism from those so well and just finesse it into this really good game so well. That I feel like even if you don't like the other ones, that it's good. One day I'll play Hey Pikmin. Maybe I'll try to do that before Pikmin 4 comes out.
It's not bad. Like, hey, I mean, Hey Pikmin is a cute little 2D platformer. Honestly, if I were to, we talked about doing a rankment of Pikmin games. And I don't know if I honestly think, hey, Pikmin would not be the bottom of the list. Or, well, Pikmin Bloom would be at the bottom of the list. But hey, Pikmin, I think I might put it over one or two. I had fun with Hey Pikmin.
Yeah, I could see put it one. I like it's just stressful. Yep. Two, they were like, okay, you don't like the stress, and so there's like no time limit whatsoever, and it just becomes boring.
Yeah.
So I could see it going over two. I'll play it. Let's do a Hey Pikmin game club.
Sure.
We have
just Hey Pikmin.
Just Hey Pikmin.
Let's go to our listener mail, which comes from Chariot Goblin, saying, hey, Connectivity, Tears of the Kingdom is a massive game. Playing it is such a blast. It seems like it will be another 5 or 6 years until the next 3D Legend of Zelda game. In the meantime, if Nintendo wants to maintain the Zelda brand while also being involved in mobile gaming, why not kill two birds with one stone? How do you envision a mobile Zelda gacha game? Is the world ready for special event variations for Zelda characters such as Summertime Tingle, Lederhosen Hudson, or Winter Holiday Sia? Thanks, and keep up the great work.
I can say that a large portion of the internet is ready for Summertime Sighton. That's all I know.
Him and Summertime Tingle would be my top two fighters in this mobile Zelda gacha game. You know, it's funny. Nintendo was working on a mobile Zelda game at some point. I think there was some reporting that came out about it, but
I think so.
Was it out of Bloomberg maybe? But there was a mobile Zelda game in development, and I think it went through like two different forms. Like Animal Crossing, that mobile game also had it, where like I think there was a version that was not well received, and they wind up kind of redoing it into what it wound up coming out as. But the Zelda mobile game, I think, was supposed to, like, 2020, 2021 is when I think it was supposed to hit. And I forget exactly when the current president Furukawa came in, but one of his first things was, like, that was under his tutelage was Dragalia Lost, which was supposed to be a much bigger game, or, like, that was a big deal. And I think Dragalia Lost is an awesome game. I think it also failed.
Was an awesome game.
Yeah, it was an awesome game. Now you can't play it, but like it was really well made. It was a gacha game, but it was like most Nintendo games where the gacha part of it is reasonably fair. You can have a good time with that game by not spending any money or spending minimal money. And I think Nintendo it's evident by what they've done. They've really deprioritized mobile. And I think this Zelda mobile game was a possibility. And now it's not. I do think that this listener mail gets at an interesting question that, like, Tears of the Kingdom is a huge success. It is building off Breath of the Wild. I am 70 hours into the game. I finally did another dungeon, John.
Good job. Which one did
Gerudo
you do?
One. The Gerudo one.
Okay. I like that one.
Yeah. It's I think at least as far as the dungeon goes, I think I like the wind one better, but the Gerudo one was cool.
I like the journey to the wind one. But I like the whole kind of like story scenario surrounding the Gerudo one.
Yes.
Like the whole lead up to the Gerudo one, I really like that.
I think the dungeon itself is like, I was more excited going into that dungeon, and then I realized I'm like, oh, this is what it wants me to do. And then it was kind of like a little rote.
All of those dungeons struggle from adhering very closely to a non-linear design.
And
that's a problem for them. Like they're definitely improvements over Breath of the Wild, but they'd still, if I was going to rank them with the rest of the series, they would not place highly.
Yeah. And I think if you broaden the scope of the Tears of the Kingdom dungeons to be like, or at least the two that I've done, but I've also seen my wife do a good chunk of the water one. Mm-hmm. I feel like if you extend it to the before parts of leading up to the dungeon, like I would say like those are very good experiences. I think if you're looking at it solely, you enter a place and then you do some puzzles and fight a boss. I think though that's where it's like, oh, that's lacking.
I do like the boss fights overall.
The two that I've had, even if I I've got some complaints that I could, like, I feel like the Gerudo one just, like, kind of funnels to a very, like, it's not, you can't really do that much other than, like, do the lightning thing. But I do, I like the wind boss, like, the spectacle of it rules.
Yeah. Yeah, I like that one a lot.
But going back to that, like, Zelda as a franchise is doing very well. It's going to be a long time before we see another game on the scale of Tears of the Kingdom. I think the Zelda team has proved that, just let them cook. I don't know if the next game is going to be in the same vein as Breath of the Wild and Tears of the Kingdom, but like, it's, we might be lucky to see the next mainline Zelda game in before 2030. Like, that's, it's going to be a long time.
Yeah. Well, and I feel like, I mean, granted, like, they did, there's a lot of new stuff in Tears of the Kingdom, but I would say that I don't think that they can use that world again. And so even if they do a continuous story and keep this incarnation of the characters, like, they've kind of got to move on from Hyrule. Which means kind of starting over.
Or at least, like, you have to change the world more than you did going from Breath of the Wild to Tears of the Kingdom.
Yeah, and even then, put him in a boat, man.
Yeah, just flood just this Hyrule. Put him in a boat. Flood this Hyrule and make a.
It's the entire thing is a water temple of you changing the water level on all of Hyrule.
Breath of the Wind, Tears Waker.
I think we're at a point where they probably need a. They probably need a secondary Zelda team. I think we've talked about that before.
We're not just doing
remakes, but doing like an offshoot, more traditional Zelda.
I mean, we could even look at Grezzo. Grezzo's making an Apple Arcade game. I did a little. I talked to some people. I don't think Grezzo's doing anything for Nintendo. I think they're just doing that Apple Arcade game. Kind of depends on the scope of the Apple Arcade game. And I also think there's a chance that perhaps Grezzo, like, worked on an Ocarina of Time 3D HD port and it's been sitting on the shelf. Like, I think that's the only way that, like, we see Grezzo working on a Zelda thing is if it's something that they finished 2 years ago and Nintendo's just been sitting on. But I have a feeling if that happened, we'd probably have more rumors about it. And I guess, like, maybe they worked on the Wind Waker HD port that was rumored in the past year.
Right. Yeah, there's a lot of Zelda games that could exist.
Like, what does Zelda do now? Like, you want to keep this franchise at the forefront of people's minds. Like, what is the Zelda game that comes out in 2024? What is the one that comes out in 2025? Because I think if you're Nintendo, it's probably in your best interest to keep that series active, because you do have the proof of, yes, you're not gonna, you know, Skyward Sword HD and Link's Awakening frame skip, the frame skip version on Switch. Yes. Like, both of those sold very well for what they were. They did not hit the, you know, the tens of millions that Breath of the Wild and Tears of the Kingdoms are doing, but I forget, that Link's Awakening might have cracked 5 or 6
Link's
million.
Link's Awakening did really well, like, through no fault of its own.
I believe it. Like, I believe Link's Awakening Switch might be the best-selling 2D Zelda game ever.
That's disgusting.
I mean, Skyward Sword didn't set the world on fire, but I think it sold 4 or 5 million, which for a remake,
it outperformed its original release.
Which for a game that is not as well regarded, such as Skyward Sword, I think you probably call that a win.
And yeah, I think it positively affected the perception of the game.
Yeah.
Like, I know a lot of people who skipped Skyward Sword who played it in the HD one and wound up really enjoying it. So, like, that's good.
Yeah. And I mean, we'll probably get remakes, but, like, we haven't had an actual brand new 2D Zelda game. I mean, it depends on what you count. Triforce Heroes was damn near a decade ago. That was a multiplayer focused one. Link Between Worlds was about a decade ago. That was used the same map as Link to the Past, like, very close to being a fully new game, but is it really? And if we go beyond that, then it's Spirit Tracks, which was on DS and came out in 2009. Like,
And that's, I do think if you can, honestly, I feel like you get a second, you do a second team, and with a second team, I feel like you could easily aim for every 3 years. Like, I don't think you can annualize it with that, but I think you can cut that time in half and have a team doing more traditional Zelda, be that 3D or 2D, and then a team doing your Breath of the Wild likes. Because that is the thing I will say for Link's Awakening doing as well as it did. It does seem to imply that there is, and same for Skyward Sword, it seems to imply there is still a market for traditional Zelda. It's not going to be what Breath of the Wild is, but there is still interest in that. So I think it's worth pursuing that. And there are plenty of people who would prefer traditional Zelda over Breath of the Wild. And I'll be honest, if, you know, I'm not quite there yet, but after another Breath of the Wild style game, whatever's next, I'll probably be ready to get out of that. Like,
yeah,
like I like them a lot, but I'm like, yeah, I am missing traditional Zelda.
I think my stance on this, and as I work my way through Tears of the Kingdom over the next 10 to 12 months of my life, might change. 70 hours into Tears of the Kingdom, I still retain the comment that I made when I was probably 5 to 10 hours into the game. If they just want to release a game like Breath of the Wild and Tears of the Kingdom every 5-6 years, I would be fine with that for now.
But it is.
I think the thing that makes me just be like, blanket statement, I'd be fine with that, is after seeing what they did with Tears of the Kingdom, which is far beyond what I expected when they announced they were making a sequel.
Yeah. Yeah, they just, Tears of the Kingdom and Breath of the Wild both really lack in areas that I've grown up feeling were key to Zelda. I think they're both fantastic games.
They're different.
But their stories suck. In a series that is the thing I would credit with making me enjoy video game stories. And their music is non-existent in a series known for its music. Like, they're just not.
I like how you name dropped me in the fucking review.
Yeah. Call you out.
Yeah. I still like, I do agree with you with the music sense, and that while I feel like we've talked about this on the Game Club episode of Breath of the Wild, is that it is the overall soundscape is why I really like the music in Breath of the Wild and Tears of the Kingdom. It is patently hilarious that they just use the same music.
That
is so funny.
I don't know if you listened to last week's episode.
I have not.
Okay. Yeah. The fact that they just use the same horse music.mp3 like legitimately goes beyond like, oh, I don't like that song, to like, it's been 6 years, dude.
Yeah,
at least re-record it.
Bitches. Yeah.
Like, what did you not have time in 6 years to do a new recording of the horse music or make a slightly different version of the horse music? Why is it the same exact file? Like, that was kind of the one element when I was playing Tears of the Kingdom where I'm like, maybe this is overpriced DLC. Maybe this is trash. Like, what is this? I paid $70. Change the horse music.
But I do, and I probably was more full of piss and vinegar during the Game Club. But the reason why some of the music in Breath of the Wild and Tears of the Kingdom works for me is because of the groundwork laid over the previous 30 years of the series. If I were coming at Breath of the Wild and Tears of the Kingdom with no attachment to Zelda games, mm-hmm. a lot of those songs wouldn't hit as hard. So like, you gotta go back to the well and start making new memorable music.
Like, yes, that's a really interesting point.
They need to churn out a regular ass 3D Zelda game so that way they could just get music to then like playfully remix.
Yeah,
to make me cry when you have the Rito Village music again.
Well, and such a huge chunk of Breath of the Wild and by extension Tears of the Kingdom's audience are people who never played a Zelda game before. Yeah. Like, most of those music cues just don't. They're meaningless. Going into the reason that Rito Village works so well for you and me is that we go, oh, Dragon Roost.
Yeah, I'm like, Wind Waker. But anybody else is like,
it's a nice song, but it has no impact. Yeah.
We could talk to Laura about it. Sure, when we bring on Laura to talk about Tears of the Kingdom, we can grill her about how do you feel about the music.
Hopefully, if Justin's listening to this episode, he's very happy that I'm saying we need traditional 3D Zelda again. Or 2D Zelda. Just traditional.
I think the world that you got to do is that, I mean, maybe it's a little bit of Numa being protective. I don't know. And I don't know if these teams come from an internal Nintendo. You work with, you know, companies like Grezzo, which you're probably not working with right now. But you have that core Zelda, like that mainline Zelda game. Clearly they are onto something with this Breath of the Wild style.
Mm-hmm.
Keep going on with that. Also have a team working on 2D Zelda. Also have a team working on old 3D Zelda games. It's kind of wild to me, and I think it might be a little bit that like Nintendo's got that protective quality control over Zelda, or you know, like this might be something where Anuma just has that. I think Anuma is probably the producer at Zelda that might have the most leeway to do whatever he wants at this point. Like maybe there is something where they're like, oh, we don't really want to extend ourselves too thin. But thinking about it from what I want as a spoiled ass gamer and what I think would be probably smart for the company is you have like a couple teams, one that's working on mainline Zelda, whether that's Breath of the Wild or starts to permutate in the future, 3D Zelda, 2D Zelda, and just have those teams working. So that way, like every 2 years or so, you've got a brand new Zelda game.
Well, and if you have that separated into three distinct teams, then each of those teams, even though you're getting a new Zelda game every 2 years, each of those teams is getting a 6-year dev time.
Yeah. Yeah.
So even if Onuma does want to like really closely oversee it all, like that's very spread out development. This isn't Pokemon. So you have time to do that. And presumably one of those teams is just in eternal remake hell. They just alternate between Ocarina and Majora's Mask, and every 6 years they release the other one.
They need to reach out to Yoko Taro and make Yoko Taro's Ocarina of Time. That is the key to everything.
We also actually could at some point see we'll probably see a Warriors for Tears.
Yeah, no, I mean, yes, please.
Age of Calamity sold real well, and there's some very obvious places in which you could put a Warriors game in Tears of the Kingdom.
Yeah.
So
Hyrule Warriors, the imprisoning war.
Yep. It has a title, for fuck's sake.
Please, because I just love what they did with Age of Calamity. And it's like seeing the evolution of Fire Emblem Warriors to Three Hopes, which is like Fire Emblem Warriors is a Warriors game I straight up did not like. Same. Fire Emblem Warriors Three Hopes rules so hard. It's so good. The story is absolutely preposterous, but that is what I expect from Warriors games to a degree. And Age of Calamity, I think, also shows that jump of what they had in Hyrule Warriors, which I liked a lot, but then what they did with Age of Calamity and the way they married that to how Breath of the Wild was, you can just do, I mean, maybe even if it is just like, we took the framework of Age of Calamity and just updated it for, you know, Tears of the Kingdom lore. Sure.
Or
I'm down. I mean, you work in the Sky Islands and the depths into that Warriors framework. Perfect.
Yeah, or, you know, lead into Age of Calamity and give me a sequel to Age of Calamity that absolutely isn't Tears of the Kingdom.
That would be rad too.
That would be awesome. Yeah.
Yeah, they just straight up Age of Calamity. Nothing in that is followed up on in Tears of the Kingdom.
Yeah, it's not like directly like it.
Does like the little mini
Guardian?
Are we
allowed to talk about Age of Calamity spoilers? Are we safe? Has it been long enough? I
guess, might need to Google this to just be like, does the weird little Guardian guy show up anywhere?
Not that I know of. because none of the characters that went back in time for Age of Calamity, spoilers, make any reference to having done that.
Yeah.
But also, it's not like they're standing there talking about how they definitely never did that.
Yeah.
Confirmation
by not deconfirming.
Right. Yes, it can sort of be accepted canon. That'll be the weird thing about the next Warriors game is Is it a sequel to Age of Calamity and an alternate reality of Tears of the Kingdom? Is it an alternate reality of Tears of the Kingdom that isn't a sequel to Age of Calamity? Like, what the timeline of just the Breath of the Wild verse is so nuts immediately. And Tears of the Kingdom seemingly almost intentionally is like, we're going to make it so much more confusing. Hold my beer.
I love just the blatant disregard for making the timeline neat. Like, it rules. Good for you guys.
It would all be fine. I wish I could just be like, yeah, it's in its own timeline. That's fine. Like, it, you know, splits off earlier. Like, Ocarina doesn't happen. It's off on its own thing. But then, like, Breath of the Wild's whole map is built on Ocarina having happened. So, like, it's like, okay, hold on. Ocarina definitely happened. This is definitely after it. What the hell is going on over there? Like, help.
What a video game.
It's nuts.
Yuma also is a very good video game. Super Mega Baseball 4.
Whoa.
Video game companies conspired to kill me by releasing Tears of the Kingdom, a bunch of Etrian Odysseys, and Super Mega Baseball 4 within 3 weeks of each other. I have, I guess, survived. Still not done Tears of the Kingdom, but since Tears of the Kingdom came out, I have reviewed Etrian Odyssey 2. They're good games, weird ports on Switch. Eventually, I've never played 3. Jordan reviewed it. I want to try 3 at some point. I probably won't play 1, if only because I feel like 2 and 1 are similar, and I also played the untold versions on 3DS of both of them. But Super Mega Baseball 4 was the sequel that, like, I looked at my Super Mega Baseball 3 review, and I was like, kind of the only thing you can do on this is add, like, the MLB license. And I did not, it was not on my bingo card that, I watched a clip of, like, the head of the developer Metalhead Software kind of talking about their, like, what they wound up doing as far as using real life players is they did not use the current MLB license. They got a bunch of, like, old retired players. You have, you know, people dating back to, you got Babe Ruth, you got Hank Aaron, and you got, like, people like Joey Bats, Jose Bautista, David Ortiz, Mike Piazza is in it. You know, Tino Martinez, like, it's a game that it's basically the baseball video game of just talking about some guys. And all I, like, when I first booted up the game, I immediately went to just look at, like, because they've got all over 200 what they call baseball legends, going from different eras. It's definitely more slanted towards, like, I think, like, your 80s to 2000s is kind of where most of the players seem to fall into, although they do have a good number of players from beyond that. And it's probably also the licensing approvals process. I think they used, like, the MLB Players Association Alumni Association. So I think, like, that's how they were able to probably get it in batches. It also helped that now Metalhead Software is owned by EA Sports or Electronic Arts, so a company that's familiar with a sports license or three. But it's just, like, delightful like that. And then how they let you play with all of the different players that they have. Like, you can just do a league where they split up the real life players into 8 teams. You could play a league where you play as those 8 teams. You can, what I did initially, take all of those legends players and do what they call a shuffle draft, which is essentially, like, you know, a fantasy draft in a you know, more traditional licensed sports game. But the way they do it just makes it very streamlined, where you go into it, you're picking 22 players, you have to fill out, you know, with different positions and everything, but it just gives you up to 8 options at once, and you have to pick one of those 8 players. So a process that, like, when I've done that in, like, a Madden, for example, like, you're looking at every player you could possibly pick, whereas this, like, really simplifies it and streamlines it, where it's just pick one of these 8. And it'll kind of, you know, it'll usually by the end, you have more limited choices because, like, you you have to draft a catcher. If you didn't draft a catcher, it's only going to give you catcher options. But in addition to that, and what my, I think my preferred state in playing the game is combining their made up players with delightfully punny names, combining that league with the Legends League. So now I have a team, I did the shuffle draft with that, where I have a team of like players that I enjoyed playing with across three Super Mega Baseball games, or players that just have really dumb names. Like I'm trying to think of some, like I still like got Knox Oxenstock or something, like it's Hammer Lung Ballo, Irene Fast, like they're all like super super goofy names, but now it's like I have a roster that is made up of you know these fake players as well as some real ones. So like I've got Edgar Martinez batting cleanup on this team. I have Nolan Ryan is my ace. Goose Gossage is my closer. And then I also have, you know, what's that? Rhiannon Cannon is my second starter after Nolan Ryan. And I like that. There's also the YouTube like content creators influencers league, which I'm not touching that shit with a 10-foot pole. But it's there.
Are we in it?
No.
Well, that's bullshit.
It's a lot of like I know like some of it's like people that cover sports as opposed to people that cover video games. Like I think there are some video games, but it's a lot of like more like the influencers in the sports world than it is as much like.
Listen, I think in the world of Switch sports games,
yeah, like surely
have to be at the top. Like, yeah.
Even like I've kind of focused a little bit more on the stuff that's like the bigger brand new stuff. They still have their franchise mode. They still have their neat pennant race online mode. They've added tweaks to everything. You could do two-way players. There's more flexibility in how you do everything. Just more options across the board. Refined mechanics. Like I said it in my review for probably Super Mega Baseball 2. I know I said it in Super Mega Baseball 3 because I read that review before I wrote my one for 4. And I said it in my Super Mega Baseball 4 review that this team just keeps on making like their next game trumps the last one as being the best baseball game ever made. Like they just keep just throwing heat. They keep ripping grand slams, ripping dingers. It's incredible. I'm like so happy to have this game. The only knock that I can give against it is that this was also the first game in the series to release on PS5 and Xbox Series X. It probably runs like an absolute dream on those systems. Load times are a little much on Switch. It otherwise runs fine, but like it is like definitely you're feeling a little bit where like, oh, 2 ran perfectly on this. And now we're starting to get straddle that line where Switch is the old system and there's a new hotness that they're probably a little bit more focused on hitting that performance level.
Does it feel graphically different from
they're definitely like doing a lot more
because the footage like, I saw, I'm not super familiar with them, but the footage I saw looked very similar to the previous ones.
Like they're not reinventing the wheel, but there's definitely like they're doing more to the presentation and stuff like that. Like it is that EA Sports juice, which I can't help but be a little cynical and be like, okay, I'm hopefully gonna get like a solid game or two out of them being bought by EA Sports before they inevitably get shut down and I'm sad.
Right.
But if they are going to I hope this does well. I hope it's successful because I hope that Metalhead Software just continues to just have the deeper resources of EA and continue to make awesome games like this, because if their first release with EA is any indication, that's what it looks like they could be doing. Because I you can feel the EA Sports boost in this with stuff like the licensed players. They have like licensed music in the game as well. I was able to recall a specific moment where when I went to Adjacent Fest in Atlantic City, the band Midtown played the song Give It Up, which I heard that I've listened to that band. They're from Jersey. I've listened to them a lot over the years. If you remember the band Cobra Starship, the lead singer of Midtown is also Cobra Starship. But like they closed on that one song, and immediately I was like, that was in a Madden game 15 years ago. Like, it was just like instantly I was like, what video game? All right, where does this take me to? And I'm like, all right, I'm drafting a team, it's football. But it's the same thing where I haven't quite had that kind of like sense, you know, like having the song boiled in with that. But there's a number of bands over the years that have done that, and notably Madden, EA series, like they're good at getting that licensed music, picking out some good bands to include in there. So that's all I got on Super Mega Baseball 4. It's a hell of a game. Got a written review up. Aspire to do a video review, but I've had two children's birthdays. Wasn't really home that much of the past week, so it made it hard to capture video.
Much like other things associated with the word aspire, you might just not.
Yeah. Give me a year, and I'll say it's
and
not
then
coming.
We'll just
we didn't
put
get
out
the rights.
A statement being like, never mind. Here's a different review.
Friday at 5 p.m. But yeah, I mean, I'll probably it's a game I'm going to be continuing to play. I did after I finished the review, I've kicked back to kind of Tears of the Kingdom all day, every day.
Yeah.
I did pick up Sunshine's Shuffle. I have not played it yet, but I wanted to support that game because did you hear anything about the news of that game?
I don't immediately recognize the name.
So it's the game where it's like a bunch of like. Where it's like a bunch of animals that like they pulled off a heist and now they're all playing Texas Hold'em and there's like stories with it. But I guess it's the guy, he did a couple other games. Names are kind of Strange Scaffold is the name mm-hmm. of the company. He got delayed in North America at the last minute because I think when he was doing some tweets about it, like was kind of joking about how like it's promoting gambling for children. And then Nintendo was like, yeah, bro, we can't put that on there. And he's like, no, it was a joke. I did watch a video from the developer just being like, I fucked up.
Like, yeah,
this was supposed to be funny. But I did buy that sight unseen for the reason that one of the preeminent voices of ska, Newtone baby, Jer of Ska 2 Network fame, which if you like music with horns in it and video games, like go listen to Ska 2 Network. What are you doing? Jer's Undertale album, which is very good. I've not played Undertale. The music is very good. The ska album that Jer put out under Ska 2 Network, very, very good. Yeah, they contributed music to Sunshine's Shuffle. So I had to support the ska people of the world.
Yeah, it's only $10. The titles of their other games, by the way, are beautiful. It's Space Warlord Organ Trading Simulator.
Yes,
and
yes, yeah.
The other one is An Airport for Aliens Currently Run by Dogs.
Yep.
Which is
I played a demo for that at a PAX, and it was a very funny game. I've not played it since it came out, though, but the demo was very good.
I've heard of the Space Warlord one. I've never heard of this airport one, and that's such a good title.
Yeah. But I'll try to play some Sunshine Shuffle and report back because it does seem like a fun. I do like it's one of those things where it's like a story based game where you like it might be that intersection of visual novel that I kind of enjoy. Like Let's Catch. Yeah. I will always look to Let's Catch. Because that was a game where I got because it was a dumb game put out by a guy who's now in prison.
Right.
But
yes.
But Let's Catch. I was like, oh, this is funny. Like Let's Tap is funny. This will be funny. And then like talking about like this kid's parents got divorced and there's like a baseball player who works for the FBI and there's aliens. And it was just one of the and like it's just you're just doing that motion of the Wii Remote of having a catch with a character as they like open up to you about their life. And it was one of those things that just worked for me. So like the idea that this is like you're just playing Texas Hold'em and learning about like the backstory of these characters, like that just sounds really fun. So what are you playing, John?
I'm working on a project right now that will hopefully go up in like the back half of the month. So I'm trying not to get too involved with anything massive. So naturally I picked up an RPG. First I briefly distracted myself. I played some Forsaken 64, which is still great. I also played a real good chunk of the Game Boy Color version of Alone in the Dark New Nightmare that's on NSO, which I think is like not good, but it's like just neat.
I messed around with that for a little bit, and it's one of those things like that Wing Commander game that you mailed me.
Yeah.
Where I appreciate what it's trying to do. I don't know if I like it, but it's so neat.
That's a good way to sum up my taste in video games. I don't like it, but it's neat. So that game, I think that's really cool. It really takes it's a game that playing it on a Switch, and even more so if you're playing it docked, is the worst thing you could possibly do to that game. Because if you ever see it on like an actual Game Boy size screen, looks pretty nice. But seeing it on like a big OLED screen just destroys it. I posted on Twitter that if you ever have trouble like parsing the backgrounds, because they're all like pre-rendered, it's like a survival horror game. If you ever have trouble parsing the backgrounds, just hit the rewind button and it makes the background really small at the bottom of your screen. It makes it way easier to see what it is. Because sometimes registering what all those dissonant pixels are trying to represent is difficult. But the other thing I picked up, or that I re-downloaded during that PlayStation thing, they showed off a trailer for Dragon's Dogma 2, and I had the realization that I own Dragon's Dogma, thought it was okay, and never finished it. And so I decided to re-download that, start it up again, and I am enjoying it much more the second time around. I think when I originally tried it, it was like between two other games coming out. Like I think I might have played it like right before Witcher 3 hit Switch or something like that. So it's just kind of like a time filler game. But this time around, it's really clicking with me. I do still find like it's something about that game is very strange to me, because it feels like an extremely Japanese game trying to be a Western RPG that's extremely heavily influenced by Greek mythology. And there's just all of these weird, like all those influences just kind of hit in a kind of strange way that I think works, but it's just very odd. I will say it, I forgot, like it looks pretty nice on Switch, especially for, I mean, it's a bit of a remaster of a 360 game, but it is ultimately a 360 game. But it's a good port.
I was telling you earlier that like this is a game that I've put a couple hours into a couple times over the years, and bought it when it was on sale on the Switch, put a couple hours into it, and then got distracted by something or else.
It looks great handheld and like really looks nice docked. So it holds up very well. But it's a Capcom game. It's an action RPG. You create a character whose heart gets taken out by a dragon. It's like an inverse Dragonheart situation. And then you go on a vague quest to do things because now you're the Arisen. Early on in the game, you get to design a pawn, which are these like they're like humans, but without human rights, I believe is what the game positions them as. I don't really get the lore behind them, and it seems like problematic, but like whatever. So you essentially get to make your partner party member, and like because your character, like you choose like your class from essentially like a melee dude, a ranged dude, and a magic dude, and then there are like additional classes as you level up. You can go into like advanced classes that, you know, combine different ones of those. It's a Japanese RPG. It has a job system. Then you make a partner character, and you can set up their job, but then you also recruit other people's party members into your party. So like your pawn that you create, that's like that person will stay with you the entire game, but then your other two party slots you fill with the party members that other people have made. That I think sometimes, like if you're offline, it'll just randomly generate them for you, but if you're online, you're literally downloading other people's characters and using them in your party. And same goes for your character is getting used in other people's party. Not so much mine right now, because this game, even the remaster of it, is like 4 years old. But in theory, that's how it would work. And so as they're doing that, like, your character is, as they're off in other people's games, they're gathering items and they're gaining experience. And then you're doing that for those other people's characters. And it's a really cool system, even though, like, playing it now, like, most of that stuff is still technically active, but it's not. Like, I remember when I played it when it first came out, like, my character was legitimately getting stuff. Now I don't think I've ever seen my character get used by another person, but that's fine. But it's a cool idea. It's like kind of a semi open world, but not really. I guess I would put it in the same category as Xenoblade, where it's like, it's a really big world, that you do progress through in a somewhat linear way. So it almost scratches that open world itch, but not quite. Yeah, I'm having a good time. I would like to finish it in time to maybe actually play Dragon's Dogma 2, because I do think it looks good.
Didn't that get a release date, right?
I don't think so.
Yeah.
But it looks cool, and yeah, I enjoyed this one the first time I played it. I'm really enjoying it a lot more this time. So, yeah, I'm optimistic for a second one to be something I can actually sink some time into on the old Series X, because that will probably not be coming to Switch.
Or at least not for a very long time.
Right. Might come to Switch U.
Yeah, no. Switch 2.
Yeah.
Switch 3, even.
Yeah. That's what I play. I haven't played Zelda in a couple days.
How many, like, well, because you... How many shrines have you done in Zelda?
I have no idea.
I am at, like, 80-something. I maxed out my stamina.
I think I might have... No, I don't think I've maxed out anything. So I play Breath of the Wild style Zelda in a way that I assume just makes some people really upset. And those people are named Justin and maybe Matt, where, like, I was telling them I hit a point with, like, the Korok seeds where I'm like, that's enough inventory slots, and I just stop. And I kind of get there with the shrines too, where, like, I do them occasionally, but then I just sort of stop turning them in, because I'm like, I'm good on hearts and, like, I have enough stamina. And I find the act of, like, going back and turning that in and, like, sitting through the cutscene for every new heart and every new stamina thing and every new inventory upgrade. Like, I'm just like, I don't want to do that. And honestly, for the inventory, and I know this from talking to Matt last week, navigating those menus gets way worse the more weapon slots you have.
Yeah.
So, like, get it to, like, 10 and then just stop. You're going to have enough weapons. Like, you're not going to run out.
I did, like, when I first got to, I guess it's not a spoiler that you take the Korok seeds to Hestu and eventually he's in Kokiri Forest. Where, like, when I got to Kokiri Forest, like, I had a good number of Korok seeds when I got there, and I kind of just emptied them out. As I'm playing, like, I could use another shield slot or two. And so when I Kokiri Forest is just, like, not convenient. Whereas I do go to Lookout Landing. One, I've had, like, some quests to turn in there. And also it is getting the battery upgrades. So it is more like I'm more going there because I'm like, I got to do the battery upgrades. Or I actually did go to the tower and spend some time in Hyrule Castle, which is super fun. But then I'll usually, like, hit up a goddess statue, or when I do, like, when I, you know, did Gerudo Town and the Rito Village, when I'd pass by the goddess statue, I'd be like, I'd cash these in. But I am at a point where, yeah, like, I maxed out the stamina. I have a lot of hearts. Like, it's something more like when I happen to be in the area near it. Yeah, sure. I'll cash it in. I've just been, like, it is a kind of thing. Like, I've just been having so much fun exploring, and I have barely been on the eastern side of the map. Like,
yeah, it took me a while to get over there.
Yeah, like, now I'm starting to get over there because I'm, you know, I'm slowly going to inch my way towards doing Goron and Zora. I forget where I left off. I know I spent some time in the depths after I finished Gerudo, you know, doing some quests in that area. And now I'm kind of working my way. I think I'm over in Kakariko right now. Working on one of the side quests. And I'm kind of, like, gonna push more to go to Akala and stuff like that. But I've just it's been really fun, and I'm kind of looking at it where as almost to tee off on the the question that we sort of answered about the Zelda mobile game. We're not going to get another one of these Zelda games for 5 or 6 years. I am in zero rush. I am enjoying playing it. I would like to continue playing it. There are aspects of it that I like. There's some I've heard some things about the back end that maybe I wish I didn't know. But like, I'm reaching that point where it's like I am just having a really good time playing it, and I've put a crap load of time into it, and I will continue to play it. And I don't know if I'll totally like 100% it through a normal person's world, basically like doing all the shrines and a lot of the side quests, but I'll definitely be chipping away at it. It might be something that I put down here and there. It's a hell of a video game.
Oh yeah, I mean, I don't feel like I stopped chipping away at Breath of the Wild until Tears of the Kingdom came out.
That was
still a game that I could load up my base save file because mine didn't get destroyed.
Yeah,
and just do find something I hadn't done.
Yeah, and I think because I kind of didn't have that experience with Breath of the Wild because I lost that initial save file. And I put like 20 hours into it in sometime in like 2018, 2019, and then, you know, put a lot more time into it, although I didn't end up finishing it a second time. But like, it was something that with Breath of the Wild kind of got robbed for me of that ability to go back and like do everything, because then my save file got lost. But it's something with Tears of the Kingdom that, like, thank you cloud saves, I feel a little bit more secure that like I'm gonna chip away at this a lot more than I did with my initial playthrough of Breath of the Wild.
It would be interesting if it then caused you to go back to your game club playthrough of Breath of the Wild and finish that off.
We'll see.
I have seen some I think it was Nintendo Life put up a discussion about like missing the emptiness of Breath of the Wild's Hyrule after playing Tears of the Kingdom, which I thought was an interesting observation. But it does kind of go back to, I think I talked about this with you a couple weeks ago, where like I don't think Tears of the Kingdom like removes Breath of the Wild from being something I want to replay, because they're not wrong. Like it's a different, like Breath of the Wild is a game about exploring Hyrule. And this Tears of the Kingdom, I kind of feel like it assumes you've already explored this Hyrule, so you can zip through it, and then we're giving you different things to explore. And so I think they work really well as a pair.
It's something that, I mean, I think when we talked about that in the past, I expressed that I feel like Tears of the Kingdom might replace Breath of the Wild for me. And I still kind of have that feeling, but it's definitely not like, there's not a period at the end of that thought. Like, I still have the feeling that, like, I mean, the only way that I'm going to know for sure is, like, 2 years from now, I'm like, man, I want to play, a Zelda game.
Mm-hmm.
Will I go back to Breath of the Wild, or will I just play Tears of the Kingdom? And, it's funny, and we'll have to save this for when we go more spoiler-heavy into it. Tears of the Kingdom story, I think, just makes me mad. like I like so much about this game, but I think you kind of got it in your review a little bit, is that like the parts of it that are very slavish to what Breath of the Wild did. And I think that I'm not saying that like Breath of the Wild storytelling is good, and I feel like I talked about that a lot in the Game Club episode, but I feel like everything with Breath of the Wild story was like part of a whole. Whereas it feels like Tears of the Kingdom is trying to do too much, or not telling a good story.
Yeah, well, and I feel like it's, you know, Breath of the Wild, I thought the story in Breath of the Wild was somewhat lacking in 2017, but it was also like it was doing something brand new, you know. So you kind of say like, okay, like, yes, this part's lacking, but you get so much right that like that's fine. So then when Tears of the Kingdom comes around, and it's not only kind of still lacking in that department, but like makes all of the same blunders, it's like, all right, man, like you had 6 years, like, and it's still just this. It feels a little less forgivable. The second time around, like if Tears of the Kingdom had been the first of these, like if Tears of the Kingdom was Breath of the Wild, then I think I would have given it a 10. but like for all of the things that it improved over Breath of the Wild, like it just made those things that didn't get touched really stand out.
I mean, I think it says a lot that when I initially could do all the geoglyph stuff, I like swarmed to them. Yeah. And for probably 40 to 50 hours of playtime, I have actively not sought them out because I have seen enough of that story and I'm like, this sucks.
Yeah, it does have moments that I like. And I can't talk about one of them because it happens towards the end.
Yeah. And I'm sure like there are definitely beats in there, but it's more the overarching story that I just think is bad. And
yeah.
There's
I love Ganondorf though.
Yeah. Yeah. Ganondorf is very good. And I do like a lot of like there's I've run into a lot of really fun overworld beats that definitely feel more intricate than they were in Breath of the Wild. And that's the stuff that is like I still like some of that environmental storytelling, some of those.
Yeah.
Like even just like the I feel like it's the thing that everybody's pointing to, but it's really well done. The journalism side quest is like super fun. Like I've done I think 6 or 7 of those. They're all so good. Like the writing's really funny. Like some of the quests themselves are just like tie into the overall story, but in a really goofy way. It just we'll have our Tears of the Kingdom episode at some point. And we'll probably just be me and Matt speaking incoherently about how upset we are about some of the story decisions.
Yes, I mean I'll be there too.
yeah.
Every podcast episode from here on out is going to eventually turn into a Tears of the Kingdom episode.
Yes. Yeah.
I haven't even played it since the last episode of Connectivity, but it's still.
Yeah, I haven't been on. I haven't recorded an episode since I started playing.
That's true.
It.
All I talk about at work too. I go to work and get everybody's updates on where they're at.
Yep.
In Tears.
I went to the farmer's market. Wound up talking to a dude there about Tears of the Kingdom for like a half an hour. Like,
yeah,
it's life right now. Like so many people that I know are playing it. Well, I think that'll do it for this episode of Connectivity. I've been Neil Ronahan. That fella's been John Raritan.
Yes.
You can email us at connectivity@nintendoreport.com. Send in some listener mail. I will call out Lemonade, send in an email about Playdate, follow up to, I guess, 2 episodes ago. Gonna save that until I take out the old Playdate and download that Panel DePon game that came out yesterday. And also just catch up on a lot of those games. So that way it's a more, I feel like when we first responded to that question, it was like, I haven't played it in a while, but it was fun. I'll actually refresh my mind, check out some of the new stuff and you know, talk more in depth about it. But other than that, I guess we'll probably be talking about Key 3 next week.
Next week is our Xbox episode.
Contractually
obligated. Yeah, unless Pikmin 4 Direct happens, that's an Xbox episode.
Yeah, if there's cool stuff to talk about, maybe Joel or Alex will stop by. Then Xbox, it is, dude, the Xbox stuff, like, they started hyping it up way too much. Like, well, they're fucked. They're so fucked.
Well, that's the question, right? Like, are they, like, A, I think they're delighted that the PlayStation 1 was bad. As they should be. Are they hyping it up because they're very confident, or are they just dumb? And I'm really hoping it's because they know they have a banger and they know PlayStation didn't. But we'll see. I'm super excited. I'm ready to be hurt again, but I'm super excited.
Because like once they start being about like no CGI trailers, it's fucking 2 hours, it's gonna be so good, your minds are gonna be blown on the floor. And when they start talking about like it's beyond the next 12 months, I'm like, so you're just gonna talk about shit that's not gonna come out for like 5 years. Cool. That's what you guys have been doing.
If you can show me gameplay of that, then I suppose I'm in.
Yeah, like show I mean, like me they've got stuff in the ether, like the Fable or Everwild.
Oh, they've got Fable, Everwild, Hellblade. Like they've got stuff just sitting
there. Was
up.
Another
They're
one on the tip of my
tongue.
Yeah, perfect Dark, whatever's going on with that game, whatever else Bethesda's doing, Outer Wilds.
They've got an Indiana Jones game.
Yeah, there's stuff. There's a chance it could be good, I will say at this point, my hopes are in the gutter because they've just been like, they've been trying to throw heat and then they just being a batter instead repeatedly for 3 years.
The one optimistic thing I will say, which I'm pretty sure I said last year, is that like they bought all these studios and they all kind of got their, whatever they were working on came out kind of around the same time for a lot of them. And we're just now hitting the point where a lot of those studios they bought are now going to be near completion on the games they started while owned by Microsoft and with Microsoft money. Like,
we're
kind of just entering this period of like, okay, that all those purchases from the last 5 years should now be starting to pay off.
Yeah. Cause so I think 2018 was the first year. 2018 was the first year where I think they bought like five companies. I mean, like, here's hoping. I hope that I look back on this episode and I'm like, haha, you were pessimistic and you should have been optimistic. But they got to show it. Hopefully they do.
Yep. Show it and then actually deliver.
Yep.
That's the hard part.
I mean, it's the kind of thing where like this, these games have to come out. These games need to have release dates. There needs to be things to look forward to beyond Starfield and actually have it be solidified.
They've got a window. They could do it. Make it happen, Microsoft.
Yep. That's Connectivity for this week. Talk to y'all next week about Xbox. Bye.
Bye.
This episode of Connectivity is brought to you by our supporters on Patreon and by Wongo Puzzles. Are you tired of the same old boring puzzles? Mix things up with Wongo Puzzles. Each puzzle is a custom design with intricate patterns and whimsical shapes that will keep you engaged for hours. Plus, their eco-friendly materials and commitment to sustainability make Wongo Puzzles a guilt-free way to unwind. They are 100% wooden puzzles. They'll last forever. Each piece is hand-drawn, so no two pieces are the same, and you'll discover some fun, whimsy pieces as you work through it. They come in a custom wooden box, which is perfect for storage and gifting. With stunning designs and unique shapes, Wongo Puzzles are a cut above the rest. So what are you waiting for? Go to wongopuzzles.com and pick your puzzle today, and be sure to use the promo code CONNECTIVITY to get 10% off your order. This is the most fun you've had with a puzzle, guaranteed, or your money back. Go to wongopuzzles.com and use the code CONNECTIVITY to get 10% off your order and get puzzling right now.